on radio, online and on mobile. This is Sports World with Caroline Barker.
The Winter Olympics in Sochi 2014, the Games moving a step closer to gender equality with the introduction of women's ski jumping. But even in 2014, disparities still exist between men and women at both the Winter and Summer Games. So why does such imbalance remain at both Olympics and Paralympics, and does it actually matter? That was the subject of the Sports World Final Word this week. I'll introduce my guests in a moment. But first, our women's sport producer Caroline Rigby has been taking a look at the history of female participation at the Games.
The Olympic movement holds the idea of equality close to its heart. To act against discrimination and support the promotion of women in sports isn't just an ideal, it's part of the Olympic Charter. And the Games have come a long way since their revival in 1896, a time when men were athletes, women purely spectators.
This country is at war with Germany.
Two world wars brought economic, social and political change, including a move towards female emancipation. In 1928, Amsterdam hosted the first women's Olympic 800 metres. But the race was branded as undignified by some, and the IOC banned women from running further than 200 metres, a rule which stood for decades. Then, in 1948, a pregnant mother of two from Holland stunned crowds by securing four out of the five gold medals on offer.
Once more, Blanker's Coon comes through in sensational style to win her fourth Olympic title, the first woman to do so in the history of the game.
Love me do. As feminism flourished in the 60s and 70s, women's events continued to be added to the Olympic programme. But after nearly a century in the making, it wasn't until the 1980s that female athletes were granted the ultimate Olympic event, a women's marathon. Fast forward two decades, and the inclusion of women's boxing at London 2012 saw female events achieve parity with those of the men. And in Sochi, only Nordic combined remained a male-only domain. Yet gender imbalance continues, from the proportion of medals available to the number of athletes taking part. The question is, will we see a day when the Games are truly equal?
And that's a question we ask on Sports World's Final Word. Joining me to debate all, live from Utah, Dee Dee Corradini. After spending much of her childhood growing up in Syria and Lebanon, she moved to the US, where she went on to become the mayor of Salt Lake City. She played a key role in bringing the Winter Games there and also spearheaded the campaign to get women's ski jumping included alongside the men's event at the Olympics. Hello, Dee Dee.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us alongside Dee Dee, but joining us from Bonn in Germany, Craig Spence, Director of Communications at the International Paralympic Committee. Hi, Craig.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And joining us to complete the guest, live from Cape Town, we have one of South Africa's sporting greats, Ilana Meyer, won silver in the 10,000 metres at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, went on to found an organisation which aims to develop future world-class runners. Hi, Ilana.
Hi.
Right, plenty to get through and so little time. So let's start then perhaps with what must be a momentous event for you, Dee Dee. We've seen Olympic women ski jumping for the first time in Sochi. Must have been a long road to get to this point. Why did you decide to get involved in the campaign to get ski jumping, women's ski jumping included at the Olympics?
Well, here I was the mayor of Salt Lake City when we got the 2002 Games, and we worked so hard to get women's bobsleigh and women's skeleton into 2002 Games, and nobody ever brought up ski jumping and that women still couldn't jump. And I didn't even find out until 2004 that women were not able to ski jump in the Olympics. And the entire United States team lives here in Park City, Utah, which is where I'm living. And when I met them and I heard their stories, it sounded like blatant discrimination to me. And it just became a passion and a mission of mine to right this injustice, because it really became bigger than ski jumping. It was a women's rights issue.
Particularly when you're not a ski jumper yourself, that women's rights issue, they're the key for you, Dee Dee.
Absolutely. And no, I've never ski jumped and I don't ever intend to, but
But the fact is, you could now if you wanted to.
That's right. Exactly. And it was so exciting to be there in Sochi after the 8-year battle that we waged to get them in.
Craig, are there events at the Paralympics where either men or women can't take part?
Well, in the Summer Games, we have football five-a-side and football seven-a-side, which is just male only at the moment. And in the upcoming Sochi Paralympics, ice sledge hockey is for men only. But we've got a strategic objective at the IPC for gender parity. And what we're looking at doing is introducing women's ice sledge hockey for the 2022 Paralympic Winter Games. And then we're looking to see how we can increase the number of women's events going forward for future Paralympic Games. And we've made great strides in recent years. So, for example, late last year, we announced the Rio medals program, and the number of women competing in Rio will have doubled in the last 20 years since Atlanta. So we are getting there. We want to get a 50-50 split. And in Sochi, there will be 34 medal events for women, 35 for men, and 3 mixed events. So the Sochi program is split in terms of medal events, but we still have a lesser number of women competing there because ice sledge hockey is just for men, unfortunately.
Interesting, though, that it's coming from you, Craig, as the organisation, as the Paralympic Committee, when in Dee Dee's case, this was someone outside of that really pushing for women to have parity.
Absolutely. The IPC, we're determined to lead the way on this issue, but we can't do it alone. So we're working with all our national Paralympic committees around the world. We've got 164 of them, and we're trying to get them to increase the number of women taking part in sports. It's okay for us putting more medal events on the programme, but we've got to have the athletes and the strength and depth to fulfil that programme. So we're leading the way. We're working with the national Paralympic committees, and we've also got to work with the international sport federations, because the IPC is only responsible for 9 summer and winter sports. And therefore, we've got to work with the other international federations for them to increase the opportunities for women to take part in their sports too.
Ilana, your position unique amongst our panel of being an athlete. Women on the track, such as Fanny Blankers-Cohen, we heard her in our montage at the start of the programme, really helped to break these barriers when it came to women competing at the Olympics. How much, as an athlete, are you aware that these things are happening around you, that these movements are happening?
No, I think growing up in South Africa, there was huge racial discrimination. I think in a position where I've always been aware of, the impact of discrimination. Being in South Africa, missing out on 2 Olympic Games because of racial discrimination, I know the severe impact of discrimination. Taking that into gender discrimination, I certainly believe that there's a lot still to be done. To truly on a global level move away from gender discrimination and getting all women, giving all women on a global the opportunity to go to the Games and participate.
You're listening to Sports World's Final Word. We're asking this week, will we see a day when the Games are truly equal? And the London 2012 Summer Olympic Games were the first to achieve parity between genders when it came to the sports on offer. The chairman of the London Organising Committee was Lord Coe, who now chairs the British Olympic Association. He's making his way back to Britain from Sochi, so couldn't join us for this discussion. But I spoke to him earlier, and he explained to me how, although there have been great strides forward, more needs to be done to improve gender equality at the Olympics and beyond. I started by asking him to reflect on his experience at London 2012.
I think that sport has consistently kicked at many ceilings and certainly boundaries. And gender equality, I think, is actually a very good story in sport. 2012, for me, was always a great opportunity to sort of be chairman of an organising committee that reflected the world I lived in. So I'm delighted to say that there were more women in senior positions in the organising committee than men.
And with that in mind, were you always aware, and are you still aware of the fact that the Olympics and sport has this great impact on society and the role that it can play?
Yes, and people say that sport tends to mirror society. I would go further and say that on some of the bigger, keener issues, it's actually set the trends. if you think about where the Olympic movement has made judgments about where to take the Games, and I think Moscow was an interesting one, the Games I competed in. We went to Seoul in 1988, and the Paralympic Games in Seoul changed the nature of disability rights in that part of the world. So the movement has often made judgments that have at the time seemed quite contentious, but have actually proven over the course of even relatively short-term history to be the right decisions. And actually, the empowerment of women, not just in sport, but through sport into other areas of society, has been a profound one within the Olympic movement.
I'm sure you're under no illusions that more can be done. In London 2012, there were 30 more medals on offer for men compared to women. There's still a large gap and a lot more that can be done. Is it possible to make that truly equal?
Yes, it is, and it will. And actually, the landscape, even in my Olympic career, has dramatically altered. My sport is a really good example. In 1984, that was the first year women were allowed to run the marathon. 1964, that was the first year that women were running above 400 metres. And, you know, track and field has been a really good example of the way women have been empowered through our sport, and much more broadly than that. But yes, of course, there's more to do. And I think the big thrust for me needs to be on women in coaching and women in senior positions, administrative positions in sport, representation on international boards. And that's not going to happen simply because you sit there with a wish list in front of you. You have to be proactive about that.
You're sat in Sochi. Obviously, the Winter Olympics were set against a very different background socially, and the issues that arose heading into Sochi. How do you bring along countries that don't want to go along on this ride for gender equality?
You don't use sport as a blunt instrument. And I can give you so many examples of the way that sport has very gently and very quietly shone a flashlight, if you like, on so many of these issues. I've never, ever seen sport as being anything other than a catalyst for change.
But then how do you distance yourself from any protests that are going on outside, any outside pressure that wants to use sport as this stick, as you mentioned?
Well, you have to be realistic about this. You know, we want to globalise sport. We want to take sport to parts of the world where it isn't currently having a toehold. We want to use sport to give opportunities across the board to young people, to women in sport. But we also recognise that in globalising sport, it comes with challenges. But it is far better to have sport on the front line than it is to say, well, you know, we shouldn't be playing internationally because we have difficulties with political systems.
It's not traditionally mixed, is it? When we think particularly of the Olympics, it is men and women in two very separate areas.
No, I disagree with that. If you're saying to me, is there more to do? Yes, of course there is. But I think actually sport did more for feminine enablement from 1945, 1948 onwards than almost any area of activity. I think it's incumbent upon all sport and all organisations within sport to recognise that there is still more to be done, but that sport actually sits as a good exemplar of the way that we manage these situations.
Lord Coe in Sochi, Didi Corradini, Craig Spence and Ilana Meyer still with me. London 2012 Olympics, interesting, nicknamed the Women's Games, with women's boxing included, meant that for the first time women and men could compete in all the same sports. Ilana, if I can come to you, is it frustrating for athletes or is it necessary to first ensure that there are enough athletes taking part or of a high enough standard when you do see that there are still differences between men and women in terms of the number of medals that can be won and the number of sports that you can take part in?
Yeah, I certainly think, these frustrations are around it. And, you know, when you want to empower and encourage a young and upcoming generation, you know, you need to know that, you know, the opportunities are there. And, you know, like Lord Coe say, I think, you know, we have come a long way, but I also believe that there's still a long way to go. You know, and you know, when I always speak to girls, you know, the best impression is, you know, is through performance. You know, so if a girl perform, you know, people take notice. You know, so even in the events, you know, where women don't compete at the Olympics level, you know, when women like really excel, you know, people take notice and would like to include it. So that's still the most powerful way of expressing is on the performance side.
Craig, I guess, I mean, that's the case with equality on all levels, isn't it? We've seen, particularly in the UK, the uptake on Paralympic sports after a hugely successful 2012 Games. And for women, it's about seeing those role models, as Ilana said.
It certainly is about seeing the role models. We saw it last year, certainly with London 2012. And I'll give you a great example of how a role model works. We had an Iranian archer called Zahra Nemati, who took part in London 2012. She won gold in archery, and she was the first Iranian woman to ever do so, either in the Olympics or the Paralympics. And the Iranian media got really behind it. Now, you might not think that with a country like Iran, but she inspired, as Sebco would say, she inspired a generation, and the Iranian Paralympic Committee saw a huge uptake in the number of women taking part in sport behind because of that performance. Now, that was a fantastic change for us. And it's people like that who can inspire more women to get involved in sport. But you need the role models and they need the opportunity to play.
Well, on that point, 2 years ago, Saudi Arabia sent two women for the first time ever to the Olympics. Sarah Attar competed in the 800 metres. And she's been speaking to our Women in Sport producer, Caroline Rigby, about that opportunity.
It was just one of the craziest things that came about. And it really did mean a lot. And I think at the time it was more just overwhelming and just the whole experience was crazy and just happening. And now as I've been able to reflect on it and see the effect that it can have and people who are moved by it, that's when I really see, wow, like I was part of something crazy and awesome and this can really make a difference.
Back in Saudi Arabia, have you any idea what the reaction was there, particularly among women?
Yeah, initially, I know it was about like a half and half thing going on. You know, some people didn't want the change and weren't sure how it would happen. And then some people were totally for it and so encouraging. And I know, based on women I've been in touch with since, a lot of people are really thankful that there is now like this more of an open opportunity. And I know that some people say like, oh, how does just one person's participation really change anything, but I feel that my participation and Wujdan's for that matter, we're kind of like these symbols now as this new opportunity that's available, and a younger generation is going to grow up knowing that that is a possibility, and I think that's what's truly powerful.
And do you think that it has had a lasting change in Saudi Arabia? Will we see more women competing at the future Olympics?
I definitely think so. I have been contacted by multiple girls in Saudi Arabia that want to know how to participate in the next Olympics. And stuff like that is what shows me that even if it's just a few people, it's people who are going to go out and make a difference. And that's where the big change comes.
Craig Spence, when we heard from Lord Coe earlier, he was saying to be careful to not use sport as a big stick to beat people with to create this gender equality. But what onus is there on the International Paralympic Committee, in your case, to actually make sure that countries adhere to these numbers of getting more women into sport and allowing more women to come and represent their country?
Well, we have to lead the way. If the international governing body of a sporting organisation doesn't lead the way, then it's bananas to think that anyone else will follow suit. So what we did, we formed a Women in Sport committee in 2002, and the goal is there for gender equality at all the games. But you've got to remember, when it comes to Paralympics, it's not just a gender balance that we need to get. We've also got to get a balance across all the impairment groups that are eligible to partake in the Paralympics. So we have to spin many plates. But touching on one thing Lord Coe mentioned there is we think we've gone a long way in getting the sport right, but there's still more work to do. But there's a lot of work to be done off the field and getting more women into leadership positions in sporting organisations. And I'll give you an example. And we had our governing board elected in Athens last November. and just four of the 27 candidates who stood for election were women. Now, three of them got elected, but that's not good enough. And we're launching at the IPCA a women mentoring program in May this year. And the objective there is to get more women into leadership positions within sports in the Paralympic movement. And we hope that's a success because that's the next big challenge for us.
Dee Dee, obviously that's a key area for you as someone that has represented women at that high level for sport and beyond. Is it difficult to open up these areas to women?
Absolutely. And if you look at our governing body, in terms of the FIS, the International Ski Federation, that controls ski jumping and many of the winter sports and skiing events, there are no women on the ski jumping committee. There are no women on the FIS Council, which is a very powerful body of, I believe, 16 men. And until we see more women participating at that level, we also have no women coaches in ski jumping. So until we get women in those positions, I think it's going to continue to be an uphill battle. And just as an example, the women in Sochi only were able to jump on the normal hill, whereas the men have the normal hill, the large hill, and a team event. So, and that's true in other sports, where bobsleigh only lets women have two women sleds, whereas the men get the two and the four men sleds. And the same is true in luge. The men get single and double, and the women only get a single sled. So
differences even within the sport themselves. Well, let's hear from one of those women who's representing at a national governing body level. Kate Caithness is the president of the International Curling Federation. She's the only female president of an Olympic Winter Sports Federation and one of just three in total. Our reporter Alex Capstick managed to catch up with her in Sochi and asked her what it's like to be in such a minority.
To be perfectly honest, it's still a man's world. It's difficult, I think, for a woman to just hit the top of a federation or to be part of a head of a sport. You know, even when you do get to this position, you still have to make yourself known to people.
Have you met with difficulties? Is the IOC a bit of a sexist organisation?
No, I wouldn't say so. Definitely not. You can't be a shrinking violet. I'm quite a strong woman, and I think you have to be pretty strong and stick to your guns and just get in there and just make sure that you're doing what you can for your sport.
I mean, what can be done to get more women involved and into positions that you're in?
Well, I think it's through all the international federations that they must appreciate. I think women, I think we're pretty strong, and you know, if we want something, we go after it 100%. We do listen, obviously, to other opinions, etc. But I do think we can weigh it up, and I think in the future, I think we will see a lot more women at the top of sports.
If we want something, we go after it. I'll get all of your final thoughts in just a few moments. But Alana, just from you, how important is it to create a structure, particularly for female athletes, so that they can see a pathway to go from athlete, former athlete, and then onto one of these governing body boards?
I think it's absolutely crucial. I think, you know, without a structure, you know, it's almost impossible. And, you know, and I think, you know, in many countries a structure exists, you know, to get athletes to the games. But, you know, there's no structure beyond, you know. So as you lose athletes from exiting the sport, you know, there's no continuation, no structure to from the sport more move into, you know, some of the leadership roles, you know, or into the coaching roles. And I think this is definitely a great opportunity, you know, if we want to lead the way.
So final thoughts from all of you, just a couple of minutes left. I guess, Dee Dee, one of those final thoughts might be give us longer to talk about it.
Absolutely. But also, if the argument has always been against letting women do more in the Olympics has been you need to grow your sport more, but it's a chicken and egg issue. And what we really need is as soon as ski jumping was allowed into the Olympics, ski jumping grew exponentially for women. We need to get these women's sports into the Olympics and then the sport will grow.
So Craig, leading by example.
Yeah, you've got to set the path for the others to follow. You've got to grasp it, and we've seen the results on it, and we know where we've got to improve. We've got to improve with women off the field of play and getting them into leadership positions and increase the number of female coaches, because then we'll increase the number of athletes too.
And Ilana, if I gave you an endless supply of money and said, go rule the world and change sport to create gender equality, what's the one thing you'd pick up on?
You know, I think that will be, first of all, a lovely, generous, class to take on. But, you know, I think it certainly is by leading by example. You know, I think, within the countries we, there's huge challenges, is to get it from a grassroots level where, where young girls can enjoy the pure joy of participation in the sport. And the one thing will lead to the next level.
On radio, online and on mobile, this is Sports World from the BBC.